If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Jeremy Zachas, and this is the reptile part of the show. Everyone's used to it by now. I no longer give a warning. But this is an unusual spring. Remember, the snakes started coming out mid-winter. And they're big snakes, and they're venomous snakes. Some that I've heard of, some that I haven't. They mostly are deviling the people of Queensland, because that's milder. But they're everywhere, and the warnings are everywhere, but still, sophisticated gardeners are victims, even though they all know about these snakes. Now, Jeremy, you say that there have been brown snakes in your neighborhood. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, our social media sites, which here in Australia, a lot of social media sites have snake warnings and snake sighting sites, just to allow us to get a bit of pre-warning when they're out and about. And I can tell you here in southern Sydney around the Campbelltown area, there have been a lot of brown snakes and even tiger snakes, which are just as venomous. And typically, the only difference is tiger snakes will live near ponds. Brown snakes pretty much live near anything. There's a lot more out this week. In fact, just around this area alone, in this neighborhood, there were at least six snake sightings. We're very, very lucky. We do have some excellent snake catchers here. All the snakes were found and captured. But this, John, is probably about a month earlier than I expect to be talking about this kind of thing, and not at this scale. So not only do we have a lot more snakes than normal, we have them a lot earlier than normal, which I can tell you means that as we get into summer, it means that these snakes will grow up into adults probably about a month earlier, which means next year's cycle could be exactly the same too. So we're expecting to be pretty much overrun with snakes this summer. And then leading into next year, it's going to be an even bigger problem.
All right. You've had brown snakes in your neighborhood. You sent me an article about a woman gardening. I believe she was in Queensland. And she was hit very badly. And a teenager came to her rescue. What did he do?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This was actually in Perth, believe it or not, John. So you'd be right to think Queensland, because that's where most of our snake bites are. And certainly this week, a lot of snake sightings happened. But this was in Perth, and this was actually a tiger snake. And it was a lady who was in her garden just going about pulling up the weeds, just getting in there and doing what you really should be doing at this time of year to stop, say, the bushfire undergrowth growing, which can cause real problems when fires come through. But she felt like she'd been basically pricked by a stick. So initially she felt nothing of it and just continued for a little bit longer. But then she had the wherewithal to look down. And when she looked down, she noticed that that stick site where she thought she just had a stick hit her actually had what looked like bite marks. So luckily enough, being Australian and understanding that snakes are literally everywhere, she thought nothing of it to say, hey, I've been bitten by a snake. She called her daughter in, and her son was inside at the time. Her daughter came in, saw what had happened, immediately applied bandages, got basically like a tourniquet over the site, so restricted the blood flow. The lady was then basically made to lay down, so she lay down, immobilized the wound, didn't allow for the blood to move through the body. Her son, I then believe, called the ambulance, who got there within 10 minutes. So this was a very quick turnaround. She managed to get the hospital within that golden hour. In fact, I think it was in under half an hour. And we can report that she will make a complete recovery because, of course, the hospital had the anti-benign. It was administered and her body reacted appropriately. But it now looks like that if she had waited even a few minutes more, it could have been a different story, because she already had signs that the venom was starting to affect her organs, which is what a lot of tiger snakes bites do. They actually start to shut the liver down, then go for the other organs. So she was very, very lucky, but it just shows that Even the most mundane, the most boring thing you're doing in your garden can actually be extremely dangerous and possibly deadly here in Australia. And it's not just the East Coast, but Perth. And as we were describing, Perth is having some weird weather conditions. So you can just imagine the tiger snakes, the brown snakes, they are all over the place there in Perth as well. So honestly, John, there's no way you can escape in Australia right now from the snakes.
Now we turn to Dallas, the magpie whisperer. You will recall Jeremy Zachas's veteran spoodle, Dallas, has befriended the local magpie family so that Dallas, after he eats his fill in the morning, he leaves something in his bowl and the magpies come walking up and enjoy it, to the chagrin of the crow family watching. All well and good, and Dallas is clearly in a good place. Jeremy recorded last week, if I recall the story correctly, Jeremy, you and Dallas went walking into another neighborhood where the magpies didn't know him, and they started to swoop down on your head, and you paid attention. Now you're going to give us an episode of a magpie confronting a kangaroo while you were driving. Explain this, Jeremy, because I don't think I've ever experienced anything like what you're about to say.
Yes, John, this is a very, very typical story. Now, just imagine, I was actually driving to work on any suburban street. It was a little bit of bushland either side. And as I was driving, I noticed just to my left, there was a kangaroo, a big grey, about 6 foot tall, bounding along beside me. So I did what I know is the right thing to do. I slowed down to allow the kangaroo to get ahead of me, which allows me to see where it's going and also shows that I'm not a threat. So there I am, 40 kilometers an hour, so say around about 20 miles per hour, with this kangaroo bounding to my left. And it looks like it was going to be all okay, until all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this magpie, this fully grown adult magpie, swoops down and lands in the path of the kangaroo. And I'm tracking this because I don't know what's about to happen next. And sure enough, the kangaroo, 6 foot tall, and a magpie being over one, well, basically 1 foot tall, the kangaroo was scared by the magpie. So what did it do? Immediately turned right, headed straight for my car. So at this point, luckily there's no oncoming traffic. I managed to swerve into the other lane. I put the brakes on. The kangaroo then basically gets just in my front quarter of my car, sees me, becomes scared of the car, does another left-hand turn very, very rapidly, and bounds off into the bushland at very high speed. But in the process, the magpie had already moved up towards the kangaroo. The kangaroo basically jumps over the top of the magpie. The magpie, of course, is scared. It then flies off, basically nearly hits my car. I managed to get back into the left-hand lane and continue driving. I guess a little bit more of a, not so much worse for wear, but I guess having learned a new lesson about kangaroos and magpies, that when you see them by the road, slow down. But my goodness, John, I have never seen such a thing where a magpie has scared a kangaroo, tried to scare it into my car, and I've had to take evasive action to the other side of the road to avoid having this 6 foot beast take me out.
Wait a minute. A kangaroo was just cruising along beside you? How fast can they go?
Oh, honestly, John, I've clocked them at 60 kilometers an hour, and especially along this bit of road because it is near a bit of bushland. And while typically you try to sort of stay just behind them, they do pull away from you at about 50 or 60. So, and that's when they're in full flight. They're amazing, amazing animals.
So a 6 foot kangaroo, probably weighing more than 150 pounds, what do you think he weighs?
Oh, I'd say at least 150, maybe 200, because kangaroos are not, they don't have a lot of fat. They have all muscle, which is very, very heavy. So you could say even 200 pounds sometimes.
And a magpie, 1 foot tall and basically very shrewd, lands in front of the kangaroo. The kangaroo is frightened and almost crashes you into you. That's what happened. And then the magpie is frightened by the kangaroo and almost crashes into you. Jeremy, this must happen all the time. Do you get a lot of car accidents because of kangaroos and magpies?
We do, we do. In fact, touch wood, I sort of like wear it as a badge of honor that I've only ever had missed and near misses with kangaroos, because in my circle of friends, I've had at least six that have hit kangaroos over the past 10 years. And car crashes, unfortunately, do occur quite often. And normally it is unfortunate that the cars hit the kangaroos severely damaged, but there are cases where cars have avoided or tried to avoid kangaroos and run off the road and hit trees too. So, John, it really is something we watch out for here and we have to be careful of, because kangaroos and cars really don't mix.
I see that, but last week I remember thinking, well, we have deer crossing signs, so you have kangaroo crossing signs. Now you've got to have kangaroo and magpie crossing signs. Now, why would the magpie do that? What, the kangaroo wasn't threatening his nest, was he? It was just, was the magpie just being prankish?
I think there's actually possibly two stories here. One could have been prankish because magpies are very bolshy. If they want to be somewhere, they'll be somewhere. Two, and thinking in hindsight where the magpie landed, there's actually a lot of like bugs and ants and like even small skinks and lizards just on the side of the road because that's where a lot of leaf matter lands. So I suspect that the magpie probably had tunnel vision, saw something very, very tasty, didn't see my car, didn't see the kangaroo bounding down on it, and just went straight in for it because the way it landed, it looked like it was basically coming in and jumping on top of something. So I think it was just wrong place, wrong time, and the magpie really wanted its breakfast. I dare say the magpies, being like they are, probably actually got its breakfast as well. They're very stubborn, and that's when it got scared and took itself away. But honestly, John, you know, magpies, you can't read their minds. They're very, very confident birds, and they're not scared to sort of like take on something about six times its own sort of height.
And I remind myself, this is because it's breeding season, so the magpies are territorial ferociously. And if there's a choice, they attack. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. In fact, they are so territorial that what they tend to do is between the mother and the father magpies, they'll often have the father basically out on patrol. So the father will actually go ahead of where the nest is and ahead of where the immediate area is and try and identify threats apparently before they actually enter the area, which is why here in Australia, a lot of bike riders, cyclists get attacked by magpies when they're still maybe a good, you know, 30 meters, so up to 100 feet away from the nest, because they try and get that defensive posture in very early. And then the mother magpie, she'll be the last line of defense. She'll actually be the second swooper if you're going to get swooped by both of them. So, John, they are very clever and they're very, very defensive.
One more photograph that Jeremy sent me saying, can you find the brown snake in this photograph? I couldn't for the longest time, but then I realized where he is. Now, Jeremy, is he ready to attack? Is that what that looks like?
Believe it or not, John, that's actually a snake monitoring. When they look like they're about to attack, they actually flatten out the side of their necks and they actually come up like cobras, I guess you could say, if you imagine a cobra edging up. But that particular snake poking its head out between the wood there, that's kind of, it's identified that there's something it's going to have a look at. And what the snakes do, and this is what makes it so hard to spot them, is they'll get their head out and they'll stay still while they watch and monitor. And sometimes the only thing you really detect is if it's quiet enough, you'll actually hear the hiss because they'll continue that process. But snakes are very, very clever. They know they won't go directly into attack, but the problem is where that snake is in that position. And luckily this photo was taken by a snake catcher who was actually about to pick that snake up. That's why he managed to draw it out. But if you don't know to look for that snake head, which is very, very hard to see against the wood pile in the background, it's only about maybe a second or even a split second between that position and striking your heart. So, John, that's a snake that's in its monitoring state, but it's going to go very quickly to a defensive strike state at any given time. So that's probably the friendliest you'll see that snake in that photo.
I was clearing brush in the garden, and I have a brush pile where I stack it all up and we burn it at the end of the season. And I had this moment to think there could be snakes in there. And then I realized I was thinking as if I was in Australia. But it would be reckless of me to turn the cuttings into a pile and get anywhere close to it because a snake would be living in there, correct?
That's exactly right. In fact, you can guarantee, right now around here, you will see no cutting piles. In fact, all of my neighbors, myself included, any little bit of cutting goes immediately into the green bin, which has a heavy lid on it. Nothing that will allow the snakes to get anywhere near it. We do have some farmland, which has these massive wood piles, and they are known for snakes, but they are literally in the middle of a paddock away from everything else. And we actually look at them as kind of a blessing because they do seem to draw the snakes out of the suburbs. So honestly, John, it's exactly as you said. We would never be able to get away with the cutting pile and be able to sleep at night.
It's October, and yet it's time to talk ashes. Jeremy Zachas in New South Wales. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. A little under the weather. I'm John Batchelor.